This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour three of Sharp Money. Here we go. Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher all week alongside the incredible Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, we're getting back to the progressive guest line now because we're kicking off hour three with one of my favorite people on the planet. 10-year NFL vet. You catch him now on CBS Sports, Sirius XM, and soon ESPN calling college football games. The man does not sleep. Let's welcome in Lijay Duzable. Legs, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Hey, let's start with your former team that you currently spend or have spent the most time around since retiring, and that's the New York Jets. Obviously, always in the headlines when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. But what are you expecting from Rodgers to start the year here? Obviously, now, right now, they're asking Robert Saleh whether or not he's going to play in the preseason. It's looking unlikely. Do you think there's going to be a long ramp-up period for him to get back to health? What do you think we're going to see early from Rodgers?
Well, the good thing about Aaron Rodgers is people tend to forget because I guess it feels like ages ago, but let's not forget, Joe, he was actually practicing with the team at the back half of the season last year. He was their scout team quarterback, and from all the reports I heard and being around the team, he was actually cutting up that championship-type defense in during the season, in the back half of the season. So you got to think he's well ahead of the curve when it comes to recovering from the Achilles injury, didn't have any limitations in OTAs, and hasn't had any throughout training camp. So you would assume that a healthy Aaron Rodgers would give the Jets the best chance to make a run, not only at the playoffs, but the Super Bowl as well. And the first things first, what the Jets had to do was they had to rectify the offensive line, because it's like any quarterback, right? When they're pressured heavily, they don't produce at such a high level. And history has shown Aaron Rodgers, when he's under duress, just like most quarterbacks in this league, he doesn't play to the level that we're used to him playing, the four-time MVP of the league. So they really did a really good job this offseason fortifying that offensive line. I will say, in early on in camp, there have been some talks and discussions about potential high snaps, which tends to happen, Joe, when you put the pads on, because the center mind gets sped up, right? Because now it's not just about snapping the ball back to the quarterback. It's also blocking that 300-plus-pound man in front of you, right? But I heard today's practice was a lot cleaner. I heard there was maybe one high snap, but it's still early in camp. It's not too concerning. But the one thing I haven't heard is there's been a lot of offensive line bus in regards to protection. If you've seen a lot of the highlights and clips the New York Jets, you know, team has put out there via social media, it looks like a clean pocket around Aaron Rodgers. And then somebody, even the beat writers and fans that have been in the stands, looks like there's been a lot of clean pockets. So that's something that you hope bodes well going forward. You know, they took Tyron Smith, or they brought him in free agency. Also, Simpson from the Baltimore Ravens at guard to really solidify that offensive line. And seems like it's panned out so far. And the rapport between Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers looks like it did last year in camp. So I'm expecting Aaron Rodgers to play at the elite level, because that's usually what he has done when he's been held upright and has had a solid offensive line in front of him.
Yeah, Lijay, can you help us understand this from a player's perspective? Because I think they're in a very unique position where they are so all in on this year. They were very aggressive in the offseason. And we know there are jobs on the line here, right? Aaron Rodgers, future on the line. Joe Douglas, the GM, future on the line. Robert Saleh, head coaching career on the line. And you look in the betting market, they're 20-1. There's 11 teams shorter than them to win the Super Bowl. What does that pressure do on a team, and how hard is it to reach that when you know that's hanging over the organization?
Yeah, I mean, there's pressure every day in the NFL. Like, there's pressure to do your job. There's pressure to keep your job. I had a coach tell me once in the NFL, you compete to play, you compete to stay, right? Because the NFL stands for not for long. So the Jets players, the staff, the front office, they know the pressure. They know if they don't get it done this year, there will be wholesale changes. So, again, I don't know how much that technically affects the players, because they feel like if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, and even if he doesn't, right, they did a really good job bringing in a veteran guy like Tyrod Taylor that could steer the ship. Say Aaron Rodgers, knock on wood, had to unfortunately miss a game or two. They feel like with Tyrod Taylor and this defense, they still have a shot at making the playoffs and making a run. So, yeah. yes, there's pressure as a player, but there's pressure every day. Like, when you go out there, like I said, a coach told me once, you compete to play, you compete to stay. Like, so, like, one thing I'll let you in on and tell you guys from a player's perspective, when they bring you in and they signed you, they're looking for somebody to replace you. So, like, there's pressure every day just to keep your job, let alone worry about, you know, the organization maybe potentially blowing things up and starting over, because you have to, first of all, do your job for before you can help the team. There's a saying we have, do your 1/11th, right? Don't worry about doing somebody else's job. Just focus on your job and we'll be fine. So, yes, there's pressure, obviously, because if they don't get it done, there will be wholesale changes, but there's pressure in the NFL, period.
Yeah, I love the insight, Lijay, and a lot of obviously pressure there in New York this year, because this is an all-in season, a last chance for a lot of guys, whether it's in the coaching staff or on that roster. Let's take a look at the rest of that division, though. The Buffalo Bills, the Miami Dolphins. The more I look at the AFC East, the more I like the Jets, not even so much because it has to do with Rodgers or the offense. It has to do with two things. I think that their defense might be the best in football, let alone being far and away better than that of the Bills and the Dolphins. And I just don't see ways in which Buffalo and Miami really got better this offseason. What do you think about the Jets' competition in that division?
Yeah, it was interesting. We've seen the betting lines kind of change. If you look early on in the offseason, I believe it went Buffalo, Miami, Jets. More recently, the Jets are a lot closer to the Buffalo Bills in regards to being the favorites for the AFC East, and the Miami Dolphins have slid back into that third spot. So when you look at the division as a whole, yes, you do have to pay respect to the Buffalo Bills because they've dominated that division for the last 4 years. But to me, it's just hard when you have that much wholesale change, right, to have success. Not only did they lose their number one receiver in Stephon Diggs, there's only one receiver currently on the roster that has actually caught pass from Josh Allen, right? And that's Khalil Shakir. So you're talking about building that continuity up with a whole bunch of new receivers. Now, I do believe with Joe Brady as offensive coordinator, they'll go more 12 personnel. When I say 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, right? They'd have two really good tight ends in Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox, who actually didn't play that much together last year because Dawson Knox was beat up for most of the season. So I could see them really leaning into the 12 personnel and then also getting James Cook involved. That's exactly what they did last year when Joe Brady took over the play calling duties. He put less pressure on Josh Allen because when Josh Allen sometimes, because he feels like he can throw the ball anywhere on the field, he sometimes, you know, reels and puts the ball where it shouldn't be and turns the football over. So a lot of times Joe Brady took the onus out of his hands and they got the run game going. They got Josh Allen some easy throws to James Cook just in the flat or on some option routes. That way James Cook could get a mismatch over a linebacker or a safety. I think you'll see more of that from the Buffalo Bills, but also wholesale changes on defense too. Their two-headed monster at safety is no longer there. Tre'Davious White isn't there. Matt Milano's coming off a major injury. We'll see how he bounces back. So yes, I know respect has to be paid to the Buffalo Bills because they have dominated this division the last 4 years. But when you have that much overturn, it's hard for me, and it's not me being a homer, to pick them to win the division over the New York Jets simply because without Aaron Rodgers, this team still won 7 games based off its defense last year. So you would think with Aaron Rodgers, I saw a stat today, the Jets defense held teams to 19 points or less the last 2 seasons without having adequate quarterback play. And Aaron Rodgers' quote-unquote worst season, which was 2022, the Green Bay Packers still average nearly 22 points. So you're talking about a 3-point swing regardless with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. So if Aaron Rodgers can stay healthy, and I know that's a big if, and you can say that about anybody, right? Because how many backup quarterbacks played last year? I mean, it'd be hard, especially for the value, it'd be hard not to put money on the Jets to win this division.
Lijay, another team that you played for, the Niners, the favorite in the NFC, plus 250, a really short price. I want to ask you about their system and Brandon Ayuk, where we don't know how this is going to play out, whether or not he's going to get a new deal. Am I crazy in thinking that Kyle Shanahan should just never really pay too much for receivers because his system can create them? Or is Brandon Ayuk a different kind of animal when it comes to that?
I don't know if you can say that because I was with the 49ers in 2017, and we had some pretty good receivers. Pierre Garçon, we had Marquise Godwin, but none of them were doing what Brandon Ayuk or Debo Samuel is doing. So, so in regards to Kyle being a genius, of course, right? He puts the defense in such a bind with so much pre-snap motion. What he wants to do on offense, right, is just for you to take your attention off what you should be doing for half a second. That's all he needs. Have a second, because there's so many nuances in that offense. I think Brock Purdy runs it perfectly in regards of processing and getting the ball out as quick as possible, right? They always have that dagger concept where they have an in-breaking route where they send somebody vertical. The crazy thing is on defense, you know it's coming, but because of a pre-snap motion here, the quarterback shifting his hips there, you're out of position, and then Brock Purdy's throwing an absolute dart behind your head. So Kyle Shanahan is so masterful when it comes to the run game and the pass game and the nuances to that offense. I understand what you're saying about maybe you shouldn't pay a receiver, but again, I was on that team in the same offense, and the receivers were good, but they weren't producing at the same level that a Brandon Ayuk or Debo Samuel. I always liken it to this, right? It is the players and not the plays sometimes, right? It's the Jimmy, not the Joes, right? It's the Joes, not the Jimmy. So sometimes it is based off the certain players in the NFL that can make certain plays that other guys cannot do. But I do agree with you. Kyle Shanahan is one of the sharpest minds in all of football.
Leja, I love the analysis. I love the insight. Thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me on, guys.
Always, anytime. You know there's an open invite there. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at DJ Doozable. Great, great insight there from someone who was in the locker rooms, on the field, for a decade. Not easy to do in this league, Dustin. A decade. I mean, what's the average career in the NFL? Under 4 years?
I thought it was three, and it might even be under three now. I mean, it's crazy. There's no guaranteed contracts. It's a grind. To go as long as he did is insane.
Not for long, like he said, right? Not an easy league to stick around. Gonna take it back to the diamond next. More plays on today's MLB card here on Sharp Money. Power ratings, picks, previews, predictions, pro, as in become a VSiN Pro subscriber and get an all-access pass to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2024 College Football Betting Guide. Tomorrow's release of the College Football Guide and our previously released NFL Betting Guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this year. The only way to get the guides and everything we have to offer is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber, and you can do exactly that by going to VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. As we move it along, hour three here of Sharp Money, Joe Cirillo in today for Patrick Maher, and really most of the week alongside the usual mainstay of the show, Dustin Sweetelson. Dustin, it's been a fun one. Obviously, Monday, Tuesday, very baseball heavy with yesterday's deadline hitting right as we signed off of the airwaves yesterday. But today, getting back into a little football, a little college football with the betting guide coming out tomorrow. I do want to take it back to baseball, though, because we've talked a few times about this really nicely spaced out slate for today. And we've got about six games still coming up, starting with my favorite, the Cincinnati Reds and the Chicago Cubs. This one is a juicy spot for me. Dustin, Nick Lodolo going for the Reds. He's struggled a bit this month, but he's going up against Kyle Auto Fade Hendricks. I call him a batting practice pitcher. He has a 7.49 road ERA. Is there anything in this game before I get into my play that interests you?
So it's just a lean right now, considering laying a half run with Cincinnati in the first five, just because, as you mentioned, Hendricks has been getting absolutely annihilated, especially on the road. Been bad in July with an ERA over five. He's also really bad at Great American Ballpark. 3-6 record, 5.82 ERA. That's over the course of 14 games, 13 starts. So if it's going to back anyone, it would be Cincy, but I'm a little bit hesitant here because while I love Lodolo, he started out hot off the IL earlier in this year, but he got kind of roughed up here. So I don't know if I'm going to end up pulling the trigger. I would lean, though, first five, lay a half run with Cincinnati.
So that's my play, man. And I did pull the trigger on this one. I got it -$1.10 on Cincinnati first five run line. I love this play. Now, Lodolo has struggled a bit in July, but But Kyle Hendricks, I mentioned the 7.5 road ERA. He also hasn't been getting run support from the Cubs. In his last six starts, Chicago has scored a combined 7 runs. They've been shut out in 3 of those 6 starts. Hendricks is just, I call him a batting practice pitcher. He's been awful on the road. And in first fives this year, 14 starts, he's just 4-10 in the first 5. No pushes, a nice clean 4-10. I love Cincinnati first 5 run line.
All right, we're doing it then. You convinced me, because the other element was the Cubs are just left for dead. They're 4-7 since the All-Star break, and they're 23rd in OPS against lefties. All that plays in. You're on it. I was thinking about it. Let's just ride together. I'm with you. Lay a half run on Cincinnati. I love it.
Grip it and rip it, baby. I love it. Let's go back to the Dodgers Pirates game. They're next to each other in the Padres. In the DraftKings screenshot here. The Dodgers Padres game. This was really, I wasn't eyeing it. It was a stay away. You know, Dylan Cease, you never know what you're going to get coming off a no-hitter. Clayton Kershaw, second start back from injury. And then I saw that total, and we talked about it, you know, maybe a half hour ago. And 6.5 at some shops, 7, but juiced to the under on other shops. Something about, I'm going to look at the first 5 total right now. But something about even that full game total coming in at just 7. Where did the Dodgers go up 5-0 last night in the first inning, and they lost? I mean, something about that total, I'm just itching to go over.
Yeah, look, we went through the trends with pitchers off no hitters. I think there's an element where Dylan Cease gets pulled a little bit early. I'd look at his total outs recorded under 17.5. It's plus money. That's just the lean. I can't quite get there because I do think there's a chance he's on an absolute heater. And if he's on a heater, that could limit the Dodgers. However, I think it's the Padres offense that could explode here and help you with that total and go over. They're crushing left-handed pitching over the last month, hitting almost 300, 842 OPS. They have a lot of good guys in that lineup against lefties. So, yeah, I would lean towards that over as well. I think that's a really, really strong play. I'm not buying Clayton Kershaw. I'm not buying at this point in his career the tread on the tires there with his arm, where he's the same guy we know. Like, there's a lot of name value with Clayton Kershaw, but he's not that same dude. I would lean Padres, I would lean over, and I would lean Cease under, but there's just so much unknown with how he's going to look, because he just came off a start where he threw 114 pitches and went the complete game. The Padres have big pictures here, right? Think about what they're looking at. They're in the wild card hunt. They currently have a spot in the wild card. They want to make the playoffs, but Darvish and Musgrove are out. They can't afford to misuse Cease and allow him to hit the IL as well, because then all the moves they made to add guys like Tanner Scott would be useless.
So, Dustin, I was worried about pitch count, too, when it came to Dylan Cease throwing 114 in his last start in that no-hitter. Looking at some other pitch count totals from Cease, this month, 106, 103. Last month, 104, 104, yeah. 106. In May, he threw 113, 107, 102. In April, 110 in April.
Yeah.
So Cease, 114 only eclipses his high mark for the year by a single pitch.
Yeah, I looked at this too. The 113, ready? What did he do in that next start? 5 2/3 innings pitched. That would be under 17.5 total outs recorded. That's why I was thinking about that.
Yeah, now when he threw 110 in April, next start out,
sure.
7 innings,
sure.
On just 90, incredibly economical.
Sure.
And that was at Coors Field. Ironically, both times he got stretched out to 110 or beyond, next start came against the Colorado Rockies. I still wouldn't want to go betting any pitcher props in this one. So how about this? Same price. You have to lay $1.40, but tell me which one, a little bit of this or that, which one you like more. First 5 over 3.5. Minus 140, or Padres team total first 5 over 1.5.
Oh, Padres.
Minus
Padres.
140.
Padres team total. I don't have.
Are we making that a play? Is that official play worthy? Padres over 1.5?
No. See, I don't have that market out here. I have not found a book that offers first 5 in Vegas team totals. If that existed, I'd be all over it. 1.5 is way too low. I think that the Dodgers actually got lucky last start with Clayton Kershaw against the Giants last Thursday, where that could have gone a lot worse than it did, where he was getting hit. So, yeah, I would back the Padres. You said it's 1.5 first 5?
Minus 140.
Okay, that makes sense. The juice makes sense. But, yeah, that's where I would go.
Yeah, I think that is one that I'm going to – maybe at the commercial break, really take a step back, take a breath, and think about pulling the trigger. Dustin, we got some other games here on the slate. I said Pirates-Dodgers before when I misspoke. Pirates-Astros, John Bowman came on earlier, gave out Houston -1.5, the run line. Always a little shaky when you're doing that with a home team. But he also said, if you're too wary to do that, he liked him first five -0.5 a run on the run line. Anything in this Pirates-Astros game here that intrigues you as Houston looks to avoid a sweep at home?
No, look, it's crazy. That's crazy. Obviously, Skeens was favored the other night. We noted that. That's an insane thing for the Pirates to not only have a pitcher favored at Houston, but to be going for a sweep on the road against the Astros. Just a couple notes on Jake Woodford, who's starting for Pittsburgh. First appearance since June 6th. Two starts for the White Sox this year, 0-2, a 10.80 ERA, a 2.40 whip. I don't think Pittsburgh's completing the sweep, but I'm not going to leave it totally out of the question. They don't hit lefties all that well. They're kind of middle of the road at 17th in OPS. I would look towards doing something with Houston, but it's a complete stay away for me.
Yeah, it's a stay away for me too, Dustin. You know what's interesting? It's actually kind of funny. Usually the full game run line and the first five run line are pretty similar in terms of juice. Full game here, you can take Houston -1.5, laying $1.08, not a bad price. First five run line, just -0.5 a run, they're -155.
Yeah.
I'd be interested if the prices were the same, but I'm priced out at that.
No, too much can go wrong. If Brian De La Cruz is playing, not that one guy makes all the difference. He is a notorious lefty killer. Like, he hits lefties really well. Framber's been awesome of late, but yeah, there's not enough that I'm seeing right with this matchup. I am high on the Pirates, though. I'm intrigued by the moves they made in the last week. I want to see how it plays out for them.
They're a lot of fun, that team. I did lay $1.55 on a first five run line earlier today, but I have to love it, which I did with Baltimore going up against, a no-name pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. And that hit, Jackson Holliday Grand Slam. Thank you very much.
And I'd also say the Blue Jays, knowing they're out of it, knowing the moves that the few moves they made in trading a few guys from the lineup and rotation, like, they're an auto fade candidate down the stretch. I would not be looking the rest of the way for opportunities to back the Blue Jays unless you're getting an enormous plus money price on that money line, which, by the way, I think will be happening quite often for them.
Yeah, the Blue Jays are going to be big dogs here. Even with Vladdy and Bichette still on the roster, you've still got a lot of no names. They did a reasonable sale out there, getting rid of Kikuchi, getting rid of Kiner Falefa. I actually like what they did, but I also think that I like what they did for the future. I think this season, they're practically an auto fade, and they've been really bad on the run line. They're a rare team if you want to keep hitting them run line. They're losing by a lot.
Yeah. And the vibes are bad. I'll always come back to the vibes. Not good.
Always. Immaculate vibes in Kansas City yesterday. Chris Ruffalo going to do some handicapping when we come back. Don't go anywhere. You're locked into Sharp Money. Sharp Money moving along here on this Wednesday afternoon. Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher this week alongside Dustin Swedelson. And Dustin, we're getting some steam here on this Mariners first five play. A little home run from Josh Rojas. We've got a lead to work with now.
Oh, love to see it. It's that fifth inning, man. It's crucial. And I'm getting a little bit of help here. It looks like a ball got away from an infielder in Arizona. They're threatening. I'm on over 4.5 for the Diamondbacks. Runner on third. Corbin Carroll at the dish. We can nickel our dime way to this ticket cashing. That's all I need.
There would be no better way to end this show than with a couple of winning tickets for you and I. In the meantime, let's get back to the Progressive guest line, though, and welcome in our buddy Chris Ruffalo from PickDogs.com, handicapper, doing a little college football, little bit of MLB action. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're great. It's great to have you on. We're talking about our baseball bets to start, so I know that the dog days of summer have been getting to you a little bit. Let's start there, and then we can just move it on and be done with baseball. But you do have one play, and it's perfectly on a game that I don't think Dustin or I have even touched on yet. What do you have between the Angels and the Rockies tonight?
Yeah, for me, there are three things that are sure things in life: death, taxes, and the Rockies stinking it up on the road. I mean, this team has been atrocious away from Coors Field. Normally you see the drop off coming right out of a Coors Field series. The change in the altitude affects the bats a little bit, but it's carried over. I mean, this is a Rockies team that's winning, what, a quarter of their games on the road this season. Kyle Freeland's been solid since returning from the injury, but he got hit for the first time last time out. Do I go out of my way to lay juice with the Angels on the road? Not really, but to be honest, it's a fade of the Rockies more than anything else. The Rockies' bullpen's been one of the worst in baseball this season. The Angels have the better bullpen since the All-Star break. For me, it's like I said, it's a play on fading the Rockies more than anything else. I'm taking the Angels here.
Chris, what's crazy is with the Rockies pitchers just looking into the splits, a lot of them have better numbers at home than on the road, which leads me to think that there's a different approach because of the altitude, because of the home runs, that's just not translating to normal games on the road. Because Freeland, 9.96 ERA versus 1.88 on the road, that is freaking crazy. And this, to me, is just a classic bet from you. Two teams nobody wants to watch, so you're going to bet on the Angels here with Davis Daniel on the bump, a guy I've never even heard of. That feels like a classic rough roof dog type of play here.
Well, first of all, I always bet on guys with two first names for whatever. You don't give me none of that stuff. I always bet on those guys. But Kyle Freeland is a Colorado kid, so
yeah.
I can see where he would be a little bit comfortable, you know, pitching in that altitude. But there's been guys like Cal Quantrill. Quantrill, for whatever reason, pitches well at Coors. You know, but you know, guys like Austin Gomber can't pitch well anywhere. So yeah. I mean, you get the good and you get the bad from the Rockies for sure.
Yeah, Austin Gomber and Ty Black, I don't think it matters what stadium they're in. Those guys are going to give it up. Chris, let's shift gears a bit. You know, at VSiN, we do drop our college football betting guide tomorrow. Let's talk a little college football. Man, you've got a juicy play you like in the SEC on a futures ticket, huh?
Absolutely, I do. You know, the Missouri Tigers are a team that I love in 2024. They're kind of like that influencer you see on social media that gets their 15 minutes of fame. They're loved at first, and then once everybody sort of kind of gets sick of them, They start to sell on him. I'm not selling on this Tigers team in 2024. Brady Cook's back. He's got Luther Burden back as well as one of the best receivers in the country. You lose Cody Schrader to the NFL, but what do to fill that void? You raid the Sun Belt and you get two of the best running backs in that conference in Marcus Carroll and Nate Noel, who combined for almost 22, I think actually over 2,200 rushing yards last year. The big problem for Missouri, though, and that, this is a saying problem in air quotes because this team still won 9 wins, was giving up the big play. But Corey Batoon coming over from South Alabama, that's a South Alabama defense that was top 15 against the pass last year. Big for a Missouri defense that was 108th in 20-plus yard pass plays allowed last season. It's going to put in a cover three defense that you don't really see in the SEC. When you look at that schedule, the SEC is in flux, and Missouri dodges a lot of the big dogs, you know. So the toughest tests they're going to have are at Texas A&M and at Alabama. But I think that there's still a ton of value for SEC to make the title game at plus 600 and to win the SEC title at plus 1800.
Yeah, Chris, I am on the same page. I am all about Mizzou this year. I actually agree with you. I think they got better at running back, which is a crazy thing to say because Schrader was awesome. How about this? You can co-sign or tell me I'm insane. I respect your opinion here. But Brady Cook for Heisman at 40-1, and I'll even throw this one out there, Luther Burden III at 80-1 for Heisman Trophy. It's going to take a lot, and a lot of things have to fall right, but it feels like that continuity and what they lost on defense, potential shootouts down the line, I feel like those guys are kind of good long shots to target.
And I think it's a play that kind of goes hand in hand, where if you like Missouri to win the SEC, a lot of it's probably going to come on the back of Brady Cook and probably Luther Burden. So I'm definitely not opposed to the Brady Cook look. The Luther Burden one might be a bit worth just a sprinkle to have something on it, but definitely love the Brady Cook look for the Heisman at plus at 40-1.
Chris Ruffalo joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Roof. That's R-U-F-F, the pick dog. Chris, let's move it over to the Big 12. Quickly, because this is a really new look conference. I mean, you look at the SEC and yeah, they add Texas, they add Oklahoma. The Big 12 is like they did a complete merger with, you know, the scraps of the Pac-12, if you will. How do you think Colorado, former Big 12 team off to the Pac-12, back in the Big 12, how are they going to fare in year one, take two in the Big 12?
Yeah, year one, take two. You know, for me, maybe it's a hot take. I think there's a lot of public fanfare and hype again around Colorado. And I think it's, once again, going to be more of a detriment than it's going to be a help. You know, Deion Sanders is the hype machine. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And a lot of players want to play for Coach Prime. But just like that case of Prime that I had in my fridge, it didn't last long, and it got crushed way too quickly for my liking, especially that blue raspberry flavor. I love that stuff. But Shedeur Sanders, he's going to get the love and good reason. He's talented, dual threat, can move the ball with his, you know, through the air and when he has to scramble. The problem is that those big games came because the Buffaloes flat out sucked running the football last year. They were dead last in the country, 2.3 yards per carry. And when you can't run the football in 2nd and 13 or 3rd and 11, you're averaging 2.3 yards per carry. I might as well play poker with you and deal my cards face up and tell you what I'm going to do. You know, were there a lot of injuries for the Buffaloes? Yeah. But the Big 12 is just as tough as it was last year with the additions of Arizona and Utah. The top teams in the Big 12 are still as good. And Colorado's defense last year wasn't able to cut it. They were having teams pass all over them. I don't see any improvements to say that we're going to see anything different. And another thing, my future is for Colorado to finish under 5.5 wins, but start at week one. Your Coach Prime, you say you need a win against North Dakota State, an FCS yeah. team that's got like a 47-5 playoff record. I'm taking North Dakota State on the money line. I think Coach Prime just shot himself in the foot. Yeah, absolutely.
I like it, man.
Oh, I love the conviction already. Yeah, let's do it. Let's ride. So, okay, the Big 12, wide open. I mean, I think we all look at this and Texas and Oklahoma are gone. There's some chaos potentially there, Chris. Would you like a Utah to win it? K-State, OK State, UCF, Kansas. Who are you looking at to win the Big 12 this year? Do you like anyone?
Just looking at the odds that you guys have on the screen here, I would say I like Utah because of the advantage that they have at Rice-Eccles. But I think that a look that not many people are giving credit to, UCF at plus 950. I like this UCF team. I like the addition of KJ Jefferson. Kind of gives the Gus Malzahn, Cam Newton vibes from Auburn. KJ Jefferson, a great quarterback that can move the ball with his feet when the bounce house is rocking. It's one of the tougher road environments in college football. They have a ton of night games. I think the schedule plays out favorably for them. So I like if UCF can dodge some bolts and get some bounces to go their way, I think UCF is a great value at plus 950.
Chris, by the way, when it comes to Colorado, man, I'm in agreement with you. I think there is more of a feasible path to Colorado being a 4-8 team than a 6-6 team this year. When you look at their schedule, not an easy schedule. And especially that non-conference, you know, North Dakota State, I'm with you. I think they are very live for an upset on the money line there. And then at Nebraska, at Colorado State, those two games on the road, you can't look past either of those teams. But a team that I am high on coming over from the Pac-12 to the Big 12, Arizona, and their win total sits at 7.5 on some shops, 8 on others. They're retaining that incredible QB receiver duo of Fifita and McMillan. What do you think the Wildcats can accomplish this year? What's their ceiling for you?
Well, for as far as Colorado goes, it's hashtag we come into a 5-7 record. Arizona, on the other hand, I'm with you. I like the combination of Fifita and McMillan. I'm concerned about, you know, having no Jed Fish there, but I still think there's going to be enough here. We've known the Big 12 to be, you know, a conference that sometimes prides itself on having a ton of offensive shootouts. And Arizona showed last year that they can be a team that can go toe-to-toe with some of the big boys, and especially not having to deal with Oklahoma, not having to deal with Texas. I think that this the Big 12 is as wide open as it's been in some time. So I could definitely get on board with the value with Arizona as well.
Great stuff, brother. Thanks for doing this. We'll chat throughout the season.
Absolutely. Can't wait. Look forward to talking to you guys again.
Give him a follow on Twitter at Roof. That's RUFF, the pick dog. Chris, thanks again for the time. Dustin, as we sweat it out here, final 15 seconds or so of the block. Seattle, one out away. 0-2 count to Devers. Can we get it?
D-backs got there for me. I'll give you play-by-play if we can sneak it in here. Pitch clock is at 7 seconds. 1-2
come
count.
Come on, baby.
Herbie's
give me
waiting.
Something. You're ahead of me.
He's waiting.
You're ahead of me. Give me something.
And foul ball. Nope.
And we'll find
caught. It. It's an out. You're good.
Let's go. We cash a ticket on Sharp Money. Back after this. If you want winners, we've got them. Check them out on VSiN.com. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles like Adam Burke's daily MLB write-ups, and more only on VSiN.com. Head there today as Sharp Money rolls along. We get ready to wrap up this Wednesday, July 31st edition of the program. Joe Serralo here filling in all week for Patrick Maher alongside my guy Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, speaking of winners, we had a buzzer-beating ticket cash right before the break. The Seattle Mariners' first 5 hits. They were down 1-0, up 2-1 here in the top of the sixth. And we cash another ticket. And you had one too, my man.
Yeah, Diamondbacks came through for me. Team total over 4.5. Remember, yesterday I told you I was not thrilled with my Seattle ticket, I bet, 25-1 to win the World Series right at the trade deadline. I'm going to retract that statement and say I feel a lot better about it because the bats have woken up in Boston. I have to give them a lot of credit. And I don't think it's just the Rosarena. I don't think it's Turner. Maybe this team could be turning a corner a little bit. I mean, they've only scored two today, but they scored a bunch the last two nights. The Mariners, because of the pitching, are built to be in every game. They just need that production to keep it going offensively, and I'll buy them long-term.
Oh, there's one.
No, he missed it.
That could be just short. Wow, just short. Raleigh sent that one in the right center gap.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bats have woken up. Like you said, it's not just the additions. It's something, and I think it has to do with the additions.
Sure.
I think the front office saying, hey, guys, we believe in you. We're going all in here has woken some of those guys up. But Josh Rojas, great month of July. Polanco, great month of July. So, you know, it's a combination of the new additions like Justin Turner, 2-for-3 today, and the guys who have been there also waking up in their own right. I like the World Series ticket because, you know, we said this yesterday. I'll reiterate. For them, the toughest hurdle is going to be making the playoffs. Once you get into a postseason series with that kind of pitching,
yep.
What was it, 2022, the year that Houston won the World Series, that they had a hard time with Seattle in that opening round, despite Houston, I think, sweeping them 2-0. Weren't those – or no, was it the ALDS? Was it Houston,
yes.
Mariners, ALDS?
Yeah,
Mariners
and the Mariners had him, and Yordan Alvarez hit like a late either walk-off. Or I only know because I had like 22-1 of the Mariners to win the World Series that year, so that was devastating for me.
Right, it was like late walk-offs, extra inning games,
yeah.
Right? Seattle, even though they lost the series, they were competitive every single night, and that's a testament to their pitching. That's going to keep them competitive this year. Similar team on the other side, if they can sneak in, going to be harder for this team, but the Pittsburgh Pirates, they could sneak into a wild card. Their pitching is going to have them live from the start if they're able to get into the postseason. But Dustin, I want to play off of that great college football conversation we just had there with Chris in the last segment and get to a team and a conference that we really haven't spent much time on today. A lot of SEC talk, a lot of Big 12 talk. How about the Big 10? And the Big 10 houses two of, I would say, everyone's maybe top five teams in the country, Ohio State, Oregon. I can't wait, Dustin, to see what the Ducks look like in the Big 10 this year.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because I think none of us have anything bad to say about Dan Lanning. We all believe in him, his approach, obviously, where he's learned under in that kind of Saban tree, went with Kirby to Georgia. Like, this is a guy that he's young. He's like my age. And he just seems like he knows what he's doing. He's very sure in the system he has in place. But you have to admit, he is up against it a bit this year going to the Big Ten. And I understand that the defense, and he's a defensive guy, brought in some names. They have some key guys returning. But you have to acknowledge, Bo Nix, Bucky Irving, Troy Franklin, Jackson Powers Johnson, all of those guys are going to potentially be starters in the NFL in the next couple of years. That is a lot of firepower to have to reload. Now, the one thing I'll say in his favor, in today's transfer portal, you can say that about a lot of the best teams, right? It's who can mix those guys in properly, get them acclimated to their new surroundings and their new systems. And that starts for the Oregon Ducks with Dylan Gabriel, who's now on his third team in his collegiate career.
Yeah, and I don't know how you feel about Gabriel. I know he's burned you a bit in the past. I personally am not the highest on him. I think that Oregon, because of Lanning, because of their coaching, and because of their weapons, that they can certainly put a winning team on the field around him. But when you look at betting a guy like Gabriel for an individual award for the Heisman, I don't believe he should be the favorite here. I don't believe the price should be that short here. It certainly is not a bet I would advise anyone into making. What do you think about that price, plus 750, which for the shortest guy on the board is not that short of a price, but I don't think Gabriel should ever be the shortest price on the board.
Yeah, I think that number's insane. Straight up, Dylan Gabriel's a guy I had in pocket at 20 and 25-1 the last two seasons to win the Heisman. He's an awesome player. Like, don't get me wrong. He had 42 total touchdowns last year. He is a dual threat. Like, but he's also a guy who played in Jeff Lebby's system for a couple years. Lebby went from UCF to Oklahoma, so he knew the system well. Now he's going to a whole new system up in Eugene. Oh, by the way, has to play a Big Ten schedule. Going to be a different grind for this team. Let's remember, Bo Nix had an awesome year a year ago. That was against a lot of soft Pac-12 defenses. It's a whole new world here. For him to be plus 750 is a crazy number because I'm looking at this market. I think there are a lot of different ways you could go. And I think if you're a person out there and you think that you have a really good angle on a player to win the Heisman, you should fire. Because I think there's a fluctuation in this market that's going to take place because of the leagues the way they are, because of the expansion of all these conferences, where there's going to be more opportunities throughout the year. I got Jaden Daniels in season last year at 14-1. I think he was 12-1 to start the year. So that just lets you know where you can get these things as the season plays out.
You know what game really intrigues me there? If we pull up Oregon's schedule, it's that week three game at Oregon State. That is a really intriguing one. Now, we all know Oregon State, they've lost a lot of talent, obviously, because they were on the short end of the stick with everything that happened in the dismantling of the Pac-12, them and Washington State. So they lost something in the transfer portal. But that's going to be a game I think the Beavers really show up for. And that's going to be an intriguing one early. And what's, for the most part, I would say a favorable schedule for Oregon year one in the Big Ten, you know, outside of at Michigan. Can we pull that schedule up? Only because in the in the back end of things here, it's cut off at the bottom for me. So
I would add
outside of that, not the worst.
But let's talk from an atmosphere perspective. The Big House on November 2nd is going to be wild. It's unlike anything that they experienced in the Pac-12. I'm sorry. And then I'll tell you this. Wisconsin, second to last game of the year, I was high on Wisconsin a year ago and got burnt. However, I believe in Luke Fickell, and I do believe Big Ten game on the road late in the year. That is not going to be easy for Oregon on the road at Wisconsin. This is not like finishing up with Washington State and Oregon State on the schedule. It's going to be a different, more physical grind. Even Illinois, that defense is going to be tough and annoying. Oregon should win, but I'm just telling you, it's a different style of football in the Big Ten.
Oh, absolutely. Look, as a Big Ten fan my whole life, I love that different style of football. When you look at the games at Michigan, at Wisconsin, they're games that Oregon should win, even though they're going to be difficult road games. Nothing's a guarantee. They should win those games, but they're going to be games that are difficult for Gabriel to stat pad, to make a case for the Heisman Trophy. That's why I hate him for this awards race, but I love Oregon this season. They also have the benefit of having Ohio State at home in Eugene. That'll be a fun one to watch. But, you know, while we're talking about Dylan Gabriel and how he might fare in this awards race, let's see what his own head coach, Dan Lanning, had to say about him.
Yeah, I think Dylan just has a great self-awareness. I've talked a lot about his leadership the last week at Big Ten meetings, and I think that maybe that doesn't give enough credit to the player he is. You know, he has an opportunity to really break some doors open here with, you know, starts with the amount of yards that he's thrown for, but I also know that's not what motivates him, right? He's done a great job of picking up our install. I think he's brought some ideas to us too as well that he does really well, and that's our job as coaches now to figure out his strengths as we lean into that. And these next 4 weeks will certainly be critical in that. But his approach every day, the way he works, looking for him to step up, you know, as a vocal leader as this season continues. But what he does on the field is really impressive.
Dustin, what are your thoughts about what Dan Lanning sees in his new quarterback up there?
Yeah, I think he's spot on, but I think what he just said, that is the new age of college football. You get all your infrastructure in place, basically through recruiting, and then when you think it's time to have a winner in front of you on your roster, you go get a quarterback that's experienced. Let someone else invest in working that guy out and developing him through the years, and then create the infrastructure that is just plug and play. And I think that's the new age of college football. All these different programs are now going forward to get everything else in place, and then it's buy a quarterback to put you over the top. He believes he found a guy who's very experienced down at UCF, couple years at Oklahoma, and now he has a chance at Oregon to capitalize on a team that was really good a year ago.
It's truly wild, the free agency element that we're seeing now take over college football with the transfer portal. Before we wrap it up here on Sharp Money, just to reiterate some picks that we have, we're both on. It looks like I talked Dustin into it. The Reds first five run line at home against Kyle Hendricks, laying $1.10. I've got Logan Webb to get the win in the Battle by the Bay tonight, +105. Dustin, did I miss anything on your end?
That's it. 2-1, hoping to finish 3-1. Let's do it.
Well, then for Dustin Sweetelson and our incredible team behind the glass in the back room there at the D, I'm Joe Serrallo. That does it for Sharp Money. Don't go anywhere. VSiN Primetime up next.